Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis.
I'm Ron.
I'm Jean Marie.
And I'm Lita. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking about the dizzying world of postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS for short, with Maddie. Maddie is a 27-year-old. She works in veterinary neurology and neurosurgery, is a neonatal kitten foster.
Aww.
Yeah. I already owed earlier when I read it. Is studying to be a veterinary neurologist herself. She's a human rights activist and also runs a popular TikTok where she raises awareness and provides research-backed information for chronic illnesses such as POTS, hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos, mast cell activation disorder, and complex PTSD. Hello, Maddie, and thank you for joining our show today.
Hi, Maddie.
Hey there. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Hi, Maddie. This is Ron over here. Can you start out by telling us what actually is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome?
Yeah, absolutely. Postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or also very commonly referred to as POTS, is a type of dysautonomia, which is a dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system. So everything that is automatic, this dysautonomia controls, or dysautonomia affects.
Throws it out of whack.
Yes. So with POTS, primarily it's blood pressure and heart rate regulation. It has some other organ system involvement as well, but it's primarily blood pressure and heart rate regulation.
Absolutely. And Maddie, what symptoms are associated with POTS?
So there are a lot of symptoms that are associated with POTS. Tachycardia and hypotension upon postural changes are the most well-known symptoms. Mm-hmm. Essentially, when we sit up or stand, our heart rate goes up and our blood pressure goes down. Normally, when someone stands up or sits up, their autonomic nervous system compensates for the change, so mm-hmm. the blood can go to the upper half of their body. Our autonomic nervous systems are dysfunctional, cannot do that, so our blood stays in the lower half of our body.
Right.
This causes the hypotension you see with POTS. Because of this, our heart works harder to get blood up to our upper half by pumping faster, which causes the tachycardia. And some POTS patients experience syncopal episodes, which is also known as fainting, when this happens. A lot of people think all POTS patients experience syncope, but really most don't. Most of us only experience presyncope. You can also see nausea, chronic fatigue, salt cravings, cognitive dysfunction, which is a fancy word for brain fog, exercise intolerance, anxiety specifically due to the tachycardia, which makes medical gaslighting kind of thing very easy to do, blood pooling, insomnia, and more. Some people also experience difficulty regulating the hormones norepinephrine and epinephrine, which causes inadequate sleep quality we often have.
True.
Yeah, that's great overview.
So, Maddie, did you have a triggering event, or was there something that happened, like an illness or an injury or something, before you started experiencing symptoms?
So that is a very good question. For me, there wasn't necessarily a triggering event or such as an illness or injury, but I do have a lot of risk factors. I am diagnosed with hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, as well as experienced pretty significant childhood trauma. Both make it much more likely for someone to develop POTS. That's why it isn't uncommon for us to also have complex PTSD, anxiety disorders, other mental illnesses caused by trauma. In 2018, I went to a residential treatment center for PTSD, and it was astounding how many people had POTS. Mm-hmm. And this was back when it was like rare.
Right.
It wasn't at all as common as it is now. So that example really sticks out in my brain. Mm-hmm. I wasn't diagnosed until the next year. A lot of people now are developing POTS as a result of long haul COVID, so it's significantly less uncommon. Right. I know a lot of people who've been diagnosed in the past 2 years following COVID, when before there was like nobody I knew in person.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we've been hearing a lot of it.
Yes. And Maddie, did your healthcare team need to run any tests to help them arrive at a diagnosis?
So my story is different than most, as I was diagnosed before long haul COVID. Before long haul COVID, it wasn't really heard of, like I said. I saw 11 different doctors within a year, some PCPs, one cardiologist, one neurologist, a rheumatologist, an ER doctor, and a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist and the neurologist actually brought POTS on the same day. The psychiatrist knew about POTS due to the link with trauma. The rest of the doctors said it, I was just anxious or it was my PTSD. The cardiologist I saw actually told me he was concerned for carcinoid syndrome, which and then in front of me opened my chart and said, oh, you have PTSD. What from? And I said, childhood trauma. After that, I said, he said, I think this is your PTSD. You're fine, which was shocking because carcinoids are a type of neuroendocrine tumor. And without diagnostics, he ruled out cancer after telling me he suspected due to a history of trauma. On another occasion, a nurse asked me what drugs I took because my heart rate was 150 for a few hours. When I don't do drugs, I don't even really drink. And I, at that point, I wasn't drinking at all. Once I got past the medical gaslighting that is all too common in chronic illness, all it took to diagnose me was a tilt table test that isn't really required. And honestly, isn't used that often anymore. It's kind of barbaric because you can do the same thing with orthostatic vitals. They call it poor man's tilt table without triggering a massive flare in the patient. I don't think it's wrong to do it if you're unsure, but there are other options. There are other things that look like POTS, so it's important to rule out other things such as mast cell activation syndrome, which is a common comorbidity as well. And I'm going to probably butcher this, and I apologize, but pheochromocytomas is one of those words I've seen and read and know a lot about, but never heard that verbally. But POTS does have a very specific look. So usually someone tells you if there are symptoms, it's probably, if it sounds like POTS, it usually is POTS.
Okay.
Okay. It's just you have to get to the point where they realize it and recognize it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So Maddie, you touched on it briefly a few minutes ago, but how common is POTS?
So it's pretty common now. Like even on Google, it changed from rare to pretty common in the where it says how common it is. Like I said before, it is associated with long haul COVID, and so many people got COVID and are still dealing with long haul COVID. All my friends I know in person have long haul COVID associated POTS. Prior to COVID, it was unheard of. I even had one doctor put in my chart that I had POTS with two T's, which is spinal tuberculosis. And oh that was really hard to explain.
Yeah, that's funny.
Wow.
And again, you may have touched on it earlier before the diagnosis. Had you heard of POTS before? And what about family and friends? I mean, again, it's more common now, but before you got diagnosed, had you heard of anybody with it?
Beyond the treatment center for PTSD, I'd never heard of POTS prior to diagnosis. And even then, it wasn't explained to me as I wasn't diagnosed, though I was placed on a beta blocker then. So I think it was suspected. So I just vaguely knew it existed. I don't have any family with POTS, but I do have suspicion based off what was considered normal growing up. I now have a good number of friends with POTS online and in person. Usually I'm the person people go to when they say something's wrong and no one's listening to me. And I'm honestly, it's usually POTS or something similar. The in-person friends were generally made aware of POTS because they were complaining of symptoms, and I recommended they see my doctor all post-COVID. And I even work with like four or five of them. And so that's pretty,
well, your advocacy work is doing wonders. Yeah, then that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very, very happy to help people.
Yeah, Maddie, how have you and your healthcare team chosen to treat or mitigate the symptoms besides the beta blocker?
So we have actually done a lot. I've increased sodium in my diet significantly. I try to eat as clean as possible, as gluten-free diets are associated with less symptoms in POTS patients. I get 2 liters of IV fluids, either lactate or ringers or sodium chloride, once a week at my local oncologist, as well as added in many medications, sometimes as Zofran, sometimes as Benadryl for my mast cell activation syndrome, because they kind of play off each other. What works for others may not work for you, but what I use is Mesinon, which is most commonly known for being used with myasthenia gravis patients, but it also works for POTS patients. Metoprolol, which is my beta blocker, which I use as needed at this point, and making sure my mast cell activation syndrome, which, like I said, is a common comorbidity, is under control, as they really like to feed off each other. When one flares, the other one flares. I also drink a lot of water and minimize the amount of junk food I eat. Compression stockings are definitely helpful to others, but I have a neurological syndrome called central sensitization syndrome and have sensory issues as a result. So things that are that touch me can be very painful, even if they're not technically painful. So compression stockings are not in the cards for me. I recently also participated in a research study that will hopefully go on to help others who suffer from POTS. There's recently found to be a correlation between POTS and Mayth-Turner syndrome. All of my friends with POTS who've been tested have it. Okay. I will note here that not everyone will test correctly for it, and you may get a false reading if you aren't tilted during the original venous ultrasound, so that's important. The theory is if you treat the Mayth-Turner syndrome, you'll also help the POTS. Okay. I do have Mayth-Turner syndrome, so I received an iliac vein stent that so far I've benefited from. And the study should be coming out soon when she collects all her data, so that'd be helpful to other people too. I believe that's probably how you guys found me. I talk a lot about it on my TikTok. I also do a form of physical therapy called tolerance training, which I definitely recommend to everyone with POTS. I would also like to point out that I'm a case that is considered less treatment resistant, so many people can manage with a lot less.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. And you said that you try to eat clean and limit your junk food. Have you changed how you eat and how has nutrition come into play with your recovery or mitigation of your symptoms?
Yeah, so nutrition plays a pretty big part in my life now. Some people can manage their POTS with only nutrition. It isn't common, but it is something that is possible.
Okay.
A while back, I did the AIP diet, which is also known as the autoimmune protocol diet. I found I do better with no gluten, no dairy, no acidic foods, and eating as clean as possible. This is supported with research as well. In a flare, you may see me reaching for foods that do not fit this description, but that is only because I have difficulty eating and difficulty cooking during flares and can lose weight very quickly during flares. And not eating will make the flare worse than if I eat something that's not great for me.
Okay. Thank you.
Maddie, what about, have you been able to modify your activities, your daily activities to manage your symptoms? What do you do?
Yeah, so I have recently started to modify my daily activities. Arguably, I should have done it a few years ago, but I learned recently that I need to be kinder to myself. I grew up being told this is all normal, which is not true. I read a great book on hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome recently that explained why our bodies do this and things that can lead us to flares that we wouldn't think about, including sleep habits. And it really changed how I looked at protecting my body. Before, I would personally shame myself for not being able to do everything everyone else does. I wouldn't do this to others, only myself. It was kind of like I will give advice, but I won't take it.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. It was really hard to see myself as disabled because I grew up being told, this is all normal. And once I changed that mindset of you must push through, because I realized that was detrimental and led to a constant flare when it didn't need to be that way. I saw a significant improvement. I am lucky in that I can work when many can't, but I do make sure that I have a routine. Nothing is too important that it can't wait until the next day. The cleaning task can wait. I need sleep and I need to make sure I don't overwork myself. And a very common phenomenon that was also touched in this book as well in our community is where we will overwork ourselves because when we feel good, we worry about the next day we won't be able to do these tasks. So we do everything we can to get them done when we're feeling good. But what this actually does is put us into that flare that we're fearing. We aren't always as good as we feel as well. Sometimes it's a dysregulated norepinephrine and epinephrine making us feel that way. So pushing ourselves so far into those situations can contribute to flares as well. So my daily routine incorporates sleep, not overworking myself. And sometimes this means at work I say, okay, guys, I got to go home. This is it. And I'm very lucky that my work team is very good with that. And also not expecting myself to be perfect all the time. I'm very lucky to have a roommate in my life who is understanding and seen me struggle for a few years. So she's pretty supportive and I'm super lucky for her.
Very, very good.
That's great. And Maddie, have you ever tried any exercise routines that are designed specifically for individuals with just autonomia?
Yeah, so I do tolerance training, which has been the best thing for me. Essentially, tolerance training is reteaching your body to send signals to your brain to push that blood up to your upper body. I am someone who experiences syncope, so when I do tolerance training, generally I'm putting myself in a corner. So if I do pass out, I'll slide down instead of potentially hurting myself.
Okay, right.
Which sounds like a big deal, but for me, it's not a big deal anymore. It's ideal to have someone with you, but not always possible. I'm a huge supporter of tolerance training. Some people also like CHOPS. Children's Hospital of Philadelphia's POTS protocol, which is also commonly referred to as CHOP protocol. Otherwise, I try to stay active. Staying active is really underrated for POTS patients, and people don't really think of the effects of decomposition on your body with POTS, but it's so important because the more we decompensate, the more symptomatic we are. Because it's very easy to say, I feel dizzy, I don't want to get out of bed, and it's completely valid, but losing that muscle makes us significantly worse, and it's so hard for us to come back from that. That's why doctors tend to be hesitant to support disability in POTS patients. They want us up, they want us moving. It isn't that they don't believe we aren't disabled at all. It's just difficult, not impossible, to come back from being bedridden. Not impossible to come back from being bedridden. Mm-hmm. I absolutely am not saying don't rest, but instead finding that balance. My German Shepherd and I participate in dog sports as well, specifically IPG, and I enjoy hiking. And my job keeps me pretty active, and I would say because of how they contribute to keeping me not bedridden, those mm-hmm. would be considered specifically how I exercise with POTS.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And speaking of hiking, we didn't ask, where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Georgia.
Okay, all right. And does the heat bother you down there?
Oh, yes, absolutely. During the summer, I have to be very careful when I go outside and when I do when it's hot. And the issue is more the humidity, honestly, than right. the heat. I have to make sure I drink extra water. Sometimes I'll do an extra infusion of IV fluids.
Okay.
But keeping those electrolytes up is very important in the summer. But honestly, a lot of the time I am not as active in the summer, and I generally tend to stay active in the spring and fall, okay. and sometimes the winter.
Time your events outside yes. so that you don't yeah. suffer.
And move everything yes. inside. Yeah.
Right.
Yes. So don't overexert yourself. Yeah.
Right. Maddie, what do you feel the most misunderstood aspect of POTS is?
So I feel like the most misunderstood aspect of POTS is how much it affects us. The quality of life and research actually done by Dr. Grubbs, who is a pretty big dysautonomia researcher and doctor, has shown to be the same as someone who is in congestive heart failure or going through dialysis. And that's not an exaggeration, like it's directly from his research. And proven. I think a lot of doctors will see POTS now and attribute I also think that a lot of doctors will see POTS now and attribute everything to POTS. Unfortunately, we have many common comorbidities that need to be taken seriously. POTS won't kill us, no, but we do have comorbidities that can. Mm-hmm. POTS also increases the risk of being insulin resistant, and I found a lot of doctors don't know that. So when you come into the ER with presyncope or syncope, and you have that as your diagnosis, they've already assumed it's your POTS. I personally struggle with reactive hypoglycemia as a result of my mast cell activation syndrome. And it really was not taken seriously when I'd go into the ER for it. And it actually was my psychiatrist saying, who said, you need to check your glucose because your lab work and your EKGs all indicate a potential issue for, and that's how it was caught. And I was unconscious for hours with the reactive hypoglycemia. So a lot of the time you have to be very careful with who your doctors are and making sure you have a good team because of that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Definitely.
We're going to pause for a minute with our interview with Maddie. To better serve our listening audience, we are an affiliate of a major medical supplier here in the United States. You will find affiliate links on our website, Podcast DX. They aim to tailor specific medical supplies and equipment based on your diagnoses to make it less stressful than looking through an entire catalog for what you might need. We are open to your suggestions and will adjust our offerings based on what you, our listeners, find helpful.
And back to our show. Maddie, do alternative therapies such as massage therapy, acupuncture, heat, or ice alleviate any of your symptoms?
So massage therapy and chiropractic work is not recommended for those with any hypermobility, including Ehlers-Danlos patients. So unfortunately, I cannot attest to the helpfulness of that. I found that regulating my temperature and keeping myself warm helps a lot. If I get too hot or too cold, I risk syncope. I find that an ice pack on the back of my neck can help. Managing stress appropriately, swimming if it's safe for you. If you have uncontrolled syncope, like you don't get a warning, that's generally not a recommendation. And keeping electrolytes up is important as well. Some doctors will recommend yoga, deep breathing, not realizing that deep breathing doesn't work. And arguably can make it worse for so many of us due to how our autonomic nervous system works.
Okay.
Raising the head of your bed 6 to 10 inches can help with morning mini flares. I've had to drag myself to the bathroom on more than one occasion, so it's pretty common. When you sit or stand, do so in ways that pump your blood up. So crossing your legs or squeezing your fists tightly were two ways that the Mayo Clinic told me. I also take magnesium as I am deficient. Electrolyte deficiencies are incredibly common and can worsen or even cause our symptoms. So seeing a reputable functional medicine doctor is also not a bad idea. Eating small meals 4 to 6 times a day is also recommended because we tend to have digestive issues. I use ginger and tea for a lot of my nausea. Some people use medical marijuana or caffeine as well to manage their nausea and vertigo as well, but it's very person dependent. Some people with POTS can't tolerate them, especially caffeine. I actually am someone who can tolerate caffeine and do well on stimulants to help with my brain fog. So like drinking Monster is something I do, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend for another patient without knowing their tolerance to caffeine, because it can make you a lot worse if you're not tolerant of it.
Okay.
I'm also a strong believer in pets being able to help us as well. Mm-hmm. I know that's surprising.
German Shepherd bark.
Oh, I have 3 dogs.
Okay. So my, okay.
That was my my middle sized dog.
Got it.
And she's a Spitz mix.
Okay.
My German Shepherd actually doesn't bark that much, surprisingly. Even though he's a puppy. My heart cat actually kept me in remission until her passing. And the severe flare I've been in for the past year and a half has been attributed partially to her passing. I really am a strong believer in pets being able to be part of our treatment plan.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So Maddie, what are some of the less apparent parts of your life that have been affected by having POTS?
Honestly, just looking at me, you wouldn't be able to tell anything is wrong. I have been told many times I had no idea you were sick. I can count the amount of times I experienced syncope in my adult life in front of other people on my hands. So it's not often. Okay. This is true for many of us, as many falsely present as young and healthy. which does contribute to the medical gaslighting, unfortunately. And it does a number on your self-esteem and self-confidence to be told that you're healthy or you don't look sick over and over when you struggle so much. you expect better of yourself and you aren't as easy on yourself, which see my comment earlier about expecting perfection from myself. Right. So many of us do have that history of childhood trauma or eating disorders as well. So it makes it even more damaging, which is another aspect people don't think about or explain. I can look thin one day, as I am. I'm pretty thin, honestly. And the next day, I look 10 to 20 pounds heavier, all due to the mm-hmm. water retention. Mm-hmm. And I see this weekly with my IV fluids. I am so grateful for them, but it really messes with my body dysphoria. And a lot of people don't consider that as well. It's all related.
Right, right. Speaking of all related, number one, when did you get diagnosed?
2019.
Okay, fairly recent.
Yeah.
And you don't have any gastro problems at all?
I do. I have suspected gastroparesis. So okay. That's why, and they like to play off each other. So mm-hmm. when I go through a flare of literally anything, I have trouble eating, which is why I said it's better for me to be eating than to be not. Even if it's not things that are necessarily healthy or good for me, I just need to make sure I'm still eating. And that's why I lost, actually, before I was diagnosed, I lost 70 pounds without even trying because of my gastrointestinal issues. And everyone was like, it's just anxiety. And I was like, I can't eat anything without vomiting. So, and the eating disorder history did not help that either.
Sure.
Right. When your body chemicals are not working with you, there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah.
With everything opening up, they say everything's opening up after COVID. We're
still in it.
We're strong believers that until I don't know if it's ever going to be done. But anyway, everything's opening up a little bit more, are you looking forward to doing anything new and exciting in the next year?
Honestly, my life won't change a lot with the reopening. I am looking forward to participating in IPG with my dog and getting back into hiking the most. Okay. Just because it's that time of year where things are kind of getting to that nice weather, right. Where we can go out a lot. And I'm excited about it. And my dog is a puppy. So dog sports, that was one of the reasons I got a German Shepherd, is because we can do dog sports together. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun with that.
That's great.
That's fun. Maddie, what support have you received during your whole journey? What role have your friends and family played? I know you said you have an amazing roommate. How else have family and friends played a role?
So unfortunately, my immediate family was a factor in why it took 13 years to be diagnosed and discouraged me from seeing doctors, and that it was anxiety for their own personal reasons. So I am no contact with my parents, and that has been the best for my health, even if it means some people are angry or don't understand why I did so, because I'm not crazy super open with why, mm-hmm. Because I kind of feel like it's our business mostly.
Sure.
My extended family has been pretty supportive, as I have some chronically ill family members who continually believed me and encouraged me to seek medical attention. They were also the reason I was able to financially afford getting a medical alert dog. They surprised me, actually, and donated to my GoFundMe one night. It was a really rough night, riddled with convulsive syncope for hours. And when I saw that, I woke up and I cried. I mean, I'm so grateful Aww. For them and for that. Unfortunately, they don't live closely. As mentioned prior, my roommate is absolutely amazing. I don't think she knows how much she has helped me, and I don't think I can ever adequately explain. My friends as well have been very supportive and caring, because there have been some really scary moments in my life the past 2 years, and they've been there for me even if they don't understand. And sometimes in flares, I can be very forgetful and hard to get in touch with as well, which means sometimes calls and texts don't get replied to. The understanding that is there is so much appreciated, because I never do that on purpose. And sure. That understanding goes both ways as well. So a lot of my friends have chronic illnesses or, you know, things like depression, anxiety. They don't get back to me immediately as well. I'm like, that's fine, because mm-hmm. I do the same thing. So it'll be like one text and then it'll be like a month until there's a reply. But they're always so wonderful and understanding, and that's all I can ask for.
Well, that's great.
Yeah,
that
I'm
you've
glad
got
you're
them.
Able to form a family on your own.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What role has self-care played in your life recently?
So self-care is something that has been neglected by me for a long time in my life. I've tried recently trying to be kinder to myself and practice more self-care because I realize the value now and the importance. Making it a priority has changed a lot for me in a very positive way. And what self-care looks like for you might not be what it looks like for me. For some people, that's doing face masks and painting your nails. For others, that's making sure you brush your teeth and go for walks. Just making sure that you're taking care of your body and feel good about yourself is so important. And since I've been prioritizing that instead of sacrificing my self-care for the care of others, my health has improved. You can't adequately be there for others and not take care of yourself. I used to disagree with that, but since I have made an active effort to take care of myself, even if it's meant me saying I can't do this or that, I see what people were talking about when they told me this, because I definitely took that personally before. Like, I can help everyone in every way, but it's not possible if you're not taking care of yourself.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. And Maddie, what advice do you have for someone recently diagnosed with POTS?
I would say keep fighting. I've been in remission before, and it is possible. I know that some days it feels impossible to keep going, but it is worth it. There are so many treatment options out there, ones that weren't available when I was first diagnosed. And if you feel like you're not being listened to by your doctor, find another doctor. You deserve to be listened to. And though many people have really awful experiences with doctors, myself included, there are good ones out there. My go-to medical team is my cardiologist, my neurologist, my psychiatrist. And I think that's a good team if you can get those specialties. Mm-hmm. I know not everyone wants to have a psychiatrist, but they can help a lot with cognitive dysfunction. Also help back you up when you say it's not anxiety, because that's going to be a very common thing you will hear when you're diagnosed with POTS, or even as you're going through the diagnostic process of POTS. Mm-hmm. Like I said, my psychiatrist caught the reactive hypoglycemia that no one brought up before. Hmm. And also, if we're being honest, it's hard to be disabled and chronically ill. Mm-hmm. Sometimes adding in an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety isn't a bad idea, and it actually helps your symptoms. And a therapist is also a good idea. I think that we are so often medically gaslit that most people don't want to admit that, because it's like, oh, we're admitting that it's just anxiety. But that's really not what it is. It's taking care of yourself. And I mean, I totally get that. I am the same way, and I've done the exact same thing for so long. But it doesn't have to be so hard all the time. And there are psychiatrists who are knowledgeable in these conditions and can really help you. The psychiatry team I see actually has me see a nurse practitioner who has experience with all of this in general practice, and she is a godsend. So if you can find someone like her, I recommend it.
Okay, that's great advice. Yes, thank you.
So, are you still there? Oh, there you are. Yes. We lost you for a minute. Sorry. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for taking time to come on our show and talk about this. How can our listeners find out more about you?
Yeah, so I'm on TikTok as Mert, which is MMYRTT, and Instagram as Invisibly Mert, with Mert spelled the same way, so two M's and two T's. My Instagram is new because my TikTok has been established for a bit. Please feel free to message me. Please be patient. Just please be patient if it takes a second for me to reply, because I'm not always able to reply or have the spoons to do so. If I am online, sometimes I'm just posting and not checking my messages, because right. That takes a lot of – it's a lot for me, honestly. I have social anxiety. So sometimes it's easier for me to post a video than to talk to someone.
Understood.
You did great now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Really.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're coming off as a pro here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate it, because I feel like I sound so anxious.
No. You sound perfect.
You did great.
Thank you. And Myrtle is the name of my heart cat, who passed in October 7th, 2021. And she kept me going and helped me keep me in remission. So the name made sense.
Right. Very nice. Very nice. Thank you, Maddie. It was really an honor to talk with you today and to learn so much more about this disease.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you guys asking me. It was an honor.
You're welcome.
Well, yeah, and thank you for all of the advocacy work that you do.
Yes, for
sure. It's appreciated.
Yeah. If I can help one person, then I've done my job.
Perfect.
So.
And yep. You help pets?
Oh, yes, yes.
You're amazing.
Thank you.
So if our listeners have any questions or comments about today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast.
And as always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.